June is Men's Health Month. Optimize your total wellness with Men's T Clinic. For over a decade, Tolos continue to trust Men's T Clinic to transform their hormone health, mental focus, weight, movement, and sexual health. Be the next life change. 972-GO-MEN'S-T or mensteclinic.com.
Good morning, DFW. It is Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fam. I'm RJ Choppy. He is Bobby Belt. Peyton and Aiden alongside. We got Diamond Cavs coming up. That's coming up at 8:20. Latest on the All-Star voting. They have the finalists out. Another crazy night in the sport with another major injury, which we will maybe touch on here too a little bit as well.
And we're just less than 2 hours away from Hagee getting dissed and you crying.
That's right.
Because we said we were going to make you cry during Crosstalk on Friday. Me and Peyton, we both have written emotional letters to you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get some tears out of you. And then after Kevin Hagelin's just backstabbing in the 9 o'clock segment yesterday, he's getting dissed a little bit.
Yeah.
I threw it together in 30 minutes. It wasn't even anything for me. It was good. Nothing.
Look at you. Look at you. So Adam Silver says he's going to address the spike in Achilles injuries. Obviously, Tyrese Halliburton got hurt in game 7 of the NBA Finals with, 5 minutes to go in the first quarter?
Mm-hmm.
The game was like had barely even gotten into any kind of a rhythm, and game 7 was already like, all right, this is a little anticlimactic, but it's a problem. It's a problem for the league because Jason Tatum also went down earlier in this postseason, and Adam Silver has to address it, and he did address it on the night of the draft.
We are looking at it, and in fact, we had already convened a panel of experts before Tyrese's most recent Achilles rupture. So we had 7 this year. We had 0 last year under the exact same circumstances. And the most we've ever had in a season is 4. NFL has had a rash of Achilles issues as well. So the purpose of convening those experts is to try to figure out what's going on. It's interesting when we look back at the last 10 years, the majority of the Achilles injuries have happened before the All-Star break. So it's not clear it's the number of games. And as you know, modern NBA players, even when they're not playing games, sometimes in the summer, they're working harder than they are during the season when they're playing 3 games a week. They're often playing every day. Some experts think it may have more to do with youth basketball. It may have as much to do with what they do from 10 to 19. Increasingly, they're single sport athletes. These guys train also harder.
Man, there's so many things that could be at play here. I don't think it's antibiotics.
Dude, that can actually do it, though.
Oh, I know it could do it.
Yeah.
But all these guys just happen to be on antibiotics, right?
Yeah.
You know. So, look, it could very easily be the training they do in the offseason. Everything is better now. It's more explosive. The training is better, but the training that makes them great also might make them frail. Pitchers get hurt with elbow injuries all the time. They've never trained harder than they do now. And it might just be something as simple as like the style of explosive training they're doing. I know I read yesterday, kinesiology doctors be like, guys, heel elevated training is awful for Achilles. Well, a lot of people do heel elevated training because it's really good for explosiveness. So again, I don't know. I'm not a doc, but they've got to look into this. It's not something I don't think as simple as, hey, put some high tops on.
Yeah, because that's obviously been one thing people have talked about. I think Nick Van Exel had brought that up. Because it is weird. It has exploded in a way that it's never been the case before.
Last night in the Mets game, did you see that play? You see what happened last night?
Mm-mm.
You see this? Griffin Canning is a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
He pitches for the Mets. He throws a pitch. Lance, he's a righty, kind of goes off the mound a little bit just to the left of the rubber, right? So it wasn't like falling off the mound. It was just like his regular follow through. And he plants with his left foot and he goes to run towards third base to, you know, maybe field a ground ball. And he just goes down and he ruptured his Achilles on the field. Mm. You never see that in baseball.
No. It's something where you've always seen it a little bit in football. Like, there's always been a little bit there, but I can't remember what the numbers were. It was something absurd. You maybe have seen it. It was like for over the course of 20 years, there were like 12 Achilles ruptures in the NBA. or 25 years or something. And then in the last handful of years, there's been a dozen, more than that.
Yeah.
And so there's clearly something.
Seven this year?
There's clearly something wrong. There's something wrong. In fact, I was just trying to find this article because I could not remember where I saw this info. And so I was researching something. And I see somebody referenced it here at the University of Virginia, Dr. Joseph Park, who does research into sports-related injuries. He had been interviewed for this for University of Virginia Today. And it was something Adam Silver just referenced there a little bit. Single sport athletes, guys who, when they're growing up, they're playing one sport and that's it.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, like on the surface, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll just do this. As a guy with two boys, when they played more, so when they play more sports, so they just started out with baseball and then they got into other sports as they got older. The athleticism increase they had just by playing the other sports was insane. And now as my older one, he's into high school. He has stopped playing basketball and football, and he's just focusing on baseball. I could tell he's a little less athletic. He's a little more stiff. The same muscles are tight every day. His hips are tight. He's a catcher, so I get it. But his hips are tight every day. If he was doing lateral movements in other sports, quick twitch in other sports, that might not be the case. It might loosen you up a little bit more.
That's not a bad explanation for it. So what this guy says, Dr. Joseph Park, what he says the Achilles tendon is known to become less flexible as we age, putting us at a higher risk of rupture once the elasticity of the tendon cannot accommodate the force applied through the tendon.
You and I are in prime age. I mean, I'm especially in prime age for Achilles ruptures. I'm scared to death of it.
Factors such as inadequate warm-up, hamstring tightness, repetitive high-impact exercises, and early focused participation in one sport have been suggested as reasons for the recent increase in Achilles ruptures. Higher rates of participation in sports activities in older patients may also play a role. So he doesn't touch on it there, but he again mentions the single sport thing. What I had read, and I trying like crazy to remember where it was, but the description of it wasn't so much what you were talking about. I mean, that may be a factor too. It was instead, they're year-round playing the same sport. They're playing basketball. And so they're year-round stressing the same tendons over and over. Like, we talk about baseball, you don't typically see Achilles issues. And so because of that, like, if you're playing baseball in one period and playing basketball, like, you're not just always stressing that Achilles for 10 years
when
you're growing up.
When was the last time you saw a non... Like, I don't even know. Have we seen a football player need Tommy John?
No, I don't think so.
Did Purdy need it when he got it?
I don't know if he actually got... I don't think he got surgery, didn't he? Yeah. Wasn't he one of the ones who just let it heal?
We never see that, right? Of course, when you stress things, you're gonna get hurt more.
He did. He was the third professional quarterback to forego Tommy John surgery with the UCL elbow repair.
I mean, a lot of people are saying, the basketball shoes, nutrition at a young age, fast food, no home cooking. Listen, I'll tell you this. If you ever go into a gym and you see high school kids, I have never seen high school kids more physically developed than they are now.
Dude, they look like adults.
Where is this coming from?
I don't know.
When I was 16, I looked like I was 12. Now these 16-year-olds, I see 16-year-old girls lifting weights. I was like, what are you? I have never seen anything like this. And then the guys, my gosh.
Dude, I always...
Is it the hormones and food? Is that what it is?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'll say this. I always reference the same person when this topic comes up. Savion Byrd. Savion Byrd is an offensive lineman at SMU. He previously was at Oklahoma, but he was a big-time recruit out of Duncanville. And I was at a youth football camp that Charles Tapper was putting on 9 years ago, however long ago it was. And Savion Byrd, I had seen him going through the drills, and he just looked different than everybody else at the camp. And... he was big. He was a big dude. And I remember I was over to the side and one of the coaches was like, yeah, he's really impressive. So I went over and talked to him and I was like, hey, I was like, how old are you? Like, what? And he's like, I'm a sophomore. I said, this is like in the summer. I was like, you only just finished your sophomore year? And he said, no, I'm going into my sophomore year. This kid was 6'4", 250, and not like a hefty 250, like a strong 250. It's wild. They all look
really
like grown men now.
They look, it's crazy. And, maybe it is what's in the food.
I mean, a lot of people are saying the certain injection they were forced to get.
But listen, if you're going to blame the antibiotics, right? If that's,
it's not without possibility that
sure hormones are things. Yeah, it's absolutely possible.
And it could happen.
Now, right? here's the concern for Dallas specifically though on this AC, or on this Achilles stuff. We've heard it's pretty common knowledge the calf injuries can make it more susceptible for you to have an Achilles rupture. Tatum had apparently had a sore calf, is what he told Gilbert.
Yeah, calf is a good way to, because
it all connects and it runs together.
You know, there's a
it affects the stability of the tendon when the calf is hurt.
You know, there's when you get any kind of a rupture of a tendon, like an ACL, mm-hmm. whatever. How much of that is because the muscle didn't absorb the shock it needed to?
Right.
The muscle's supposed to absorb the shock to protect your tendons or whatever. And when that doesn't happen, if you've got a dead spot in your muscle or you've got a strain, and then that way it can't take on the same shock, you know, that has to go somewhere. That has to go somewhere.
Here's the concern for me then, and I wonder, are we looking at a ticking time bomb potentially, given the rash of Achilles injuries? Are we looking at a ticking time bomb with Anthony Davis? So I looked up something.
Does he have an injury?
He has, each of the last 6 years, he has had at least one, oftentimes multiple instances of injuries that he's dealt with relating to his calf or his Achilles. Each of the last 6 years, he's hurt his calf or his Achilles during the season.
Wow.
And I mean, some of these have been like there was a concern, I think, 3 years ago, like had he ruptured his Achilles, and he didn't. But he missed a lot of time. And then he's had a bunch of different calf injuries. So with all of the concerns we already have about Anthony Davis's health and all that seems to be riding on him, like, is he a really high level of concern this next year? Especially with the Mavs training staff having been turned over and not getting a lot of high reviews.
Man, I'm scared to death of that because, yeah, Nico, when he made the trade, he could make all the comments he wants about, you know, this is for win now, Luka doesn't, you know, whatever, all that. Anthony Davis was always a bigger question mark than Luka.
Yeah, in terms of health, yes.
He's never, now, has he been?
He works hard, he keeps himself in shape, but he's fragile.
Has he been more healthy in the last two seasons than Luka? Yeah. Okay, low bar. He still missed a ton of games, but let's not mistake this at all. Anthony Davis he has a nickname, Street Clothes, for a reason.
Yeah.
So it's a concern. I mean, a lot of injuries for him are a concern.
I would just say specifically, because you remember that was, we had heard that was a little bit of what Luka's concern was. So when Luka had the calf injury,
yes.
and he was wanting to stay home and didn't want to chance anything or push anything forward, one of the reports that was out there was like he wanted to make sure that his team, like, that was stable and he wasn't mm-hmm. going to be dealing with anything there. If the Mavericks are known already for kind of trying to push him back, and Anthony Davis, we already heard from Windhorst earlier today, and we knew about it at the time, Anthony Davis pushed himself to come back sooner than he should have from the abductor strain.
Yeah, he did.
And he ended up getting hurt again.
Mm-hmm.
If this is an organization that's going to pressure him to come back from a calf injury a little faster, and Anthony Davis feels the pressure of, I need to come back, and all this rash of Achilles injuries, it just makes me wonder if there's a high risk there specifically with Anthony Davis. Like, hey, you need to really watch the Achilles.
Like, guys are rupturing these things in large part because they're just more explosive than they ever were.
There's that.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
Why didn't guys in the 80s rupture? I mean, have you go watch a basketball game in the 80s. There's no explosiveness.
Yeah.
Right? There's like two, like each player had like, each team had like two guys who could shoot.
I mean, they could only dribble with their right hand too.
They could only dribble with the right hand. And one guy, I mean, it was just a slower game, right? It was just not.
It's different.
It's different. You know, you need the right amount of, what is it, the coefficient of zero or whatever it is?
Sure.
You need the right amount of friction, and they just didn't have it. So there you go. That's a little Achilles tear discussion, which I hate to have, but we got to have it.
I mean, it's just the reality of the NBA right now.
Diamond Cavs coming up next. Bruce Bochy honored, a local flair to the WBC, and who is the Ranger in the All-Star game? Diamond Cavs next on 105.3 The Fan.
June is Men's Health Month. Optimize your total wellness with Men's T Clinic. For over a decade, Tolos continue to trust Men's T Clinic to transform their hormone health, mental focus, weight, movement, and sexual health. Be the next life change. 972-GO-MEN'S-T or mensteclinic.com.
You're an idiot and you don't know baseball.
Ranger fans, you're not dreaming.
How can you not be romantic about baseball?
How can you not be romantic about the return of Nasty Nate Eovaldi? And that happens tonight at the Globe. Let's go.
Couldn't come soon enough. Pigeon's starting to get a little shaky. They're not to blame, obviously. Offense has got to be better. But outside of Jacob DeGrom, man, this pitching has been a little sus lately. Eovaldi coming back is going to be massive. I'm genuinely excited to see him back on the hill.
I am too. I am too. They need to see. They need him. They really do. They've got, you know, they're going up against Castillo, Wu, and Gilbert this weekend. And it's going to be Eovaldi, Rocker, and Leiter. That's some decent pitching matchups. Eovaldi and Gilbert tonight. This is one of those, like, really juicy pitching matchups.
Oh, yeah. This is
a fun one.
This is
take the under.
Look, I know it's Friday, and a lot of people are going to be out and about. This is why, this is one of those nights you just stay glued to your radio, though. Wherever you are, mm-hmm. if you're at the bar, wherever else, you have it on 105 through the Fan, and you are listening closely to this matchup.
And if you're going to the game, put the old AirPods in.
Exactly.
And listen at the game. There's nothing quite like listening to a ball game at the ball game.
Get all the hot goss right there in your ear about what's going on.
The hot
game.
Goss. The huh? hot gossip. The hot yeah. goss. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The hot goss. See, you should goss. Love that. That's your kind of language I'm speaking right there.
It is. But I'm excited about this pitching matchup. It's going to be Eovaldi and Gilbert, Rocker and Wu, Leiter and Castillo. So they got Seattle here for three and then Baltimore here for three before they head out on a 10-game road trip. This is brutal. At San Diego, at the Angels, at Houston to end the first half of the season, because the All-Star game is in 2 weeks.
Two and a half weeks.
2.5 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are well through halfway. We are well through this baseball season. We have reached the midway point the other day.
Yeah, we're at half for the Rangers season. They're at 81 games.
Almost every team has hit at least the 80 game mark this year, some a little bit more. So that's good. So what happens though when you get to this time of year? Well, the All-Star voting is really taking shape.
Mm-hmm.
And we have reached, so a couple of years ago they changed this up, right? It's not just the voting. So you vote and then you get the top two finalists and then you vote again. And now the top vote getters in each league get an automatic pass. They are automatically starters. For the fourth time since 2017, Aaron Judge is the MLB leading vote getter, over 4 million votes. Shohei, so he's automatically in. Shohei, he is number two. He leads the NL. He's got 3.967 million. He is also in, third time he's been the MLB's top vote getter. Fourth time Judge has led the American League in voting. So we are going to have Judge for sure in, Shohei for sure in. But one of the guys playing tonight, Cal Raleigh, Alejandro Kirk, those are your two for catcher in the AL. Goldschmidt and Vlad Jr. for first base. Gleyber Torres, Jackson Holliday for second. Jose Ramirez, Alex Bregman for third. Jacob Wilson.
Dude, he's been... He's
you
been
had a
really
little thing on him, didn't you?
Yeah, Jacob Wilson's been really good so far this season for the A's. I was going to say the Oakland A's, but that's not exactly accurate anymore. But ESPN had a profile piece on him, and... Boy, this is this current day and age. This is the new way of doing things. Jacob Wilson is saying that the reason for his success is none other than Fortnite. He said, "Kids are going to love this one. Parents are going to hate me." He said, "I'm a big believer in video games. It's fast decision-making strategy. I think that gets me ready for the game because when you're in the box, you have to process a lot. So there's some days where I'll wake up and I'll play video games and then I'll go to the field and I'll have a good day. Some days I won't play and don't see the ball well. I think it really helps me train kind of the decision-making that I have to make 6-7 hours later at the baseball field." So if you want Luka to really maximize his abilities, you're supposed to let him play video games all day at home.
I have no problem with him playing. He plays the MLB The Show a lot. I think The Show actually helps you, and I'm sure the football games do. I'm sure like Madden helps you. I think The Show actually helps you how to work hitters if you're a pitcher.
I think it's like
how to set guys up, punch tickets.
At a very young age, obviously not at the major league level, but at a younger age, I could definitely see like playing the game and playing against an AI version of that sort of thing. It could help you with approach and understanding pitch sequencing and stuff, I would imagine.
I think it could. You know, plus he's the son of a major leaguer too.
Jacob Wilson.
I thought he was Brian Wilson's son.
I do not think he's Brian Wilson's son.
Oh.
I don't think so.
Well, good.
That's but,
good.
Yeah, I mean, that's oh, by the way, help me on the fan text here, 877-811-1053. My youngest said, yes, you're speaking of Fortnite.
You were right, by the way. His dad was Jack Wilson. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I remember Jack Wilson.
Right. My son plays Fortnite a lot. He calls me yesterday. He goes, Fortnite has some kind of lawsuit. He's like, you can make $250. You got to fill this thing out. Is he being scammed? Am I being scammed? Have you heard about that?
No, it's a real thing. Now, odds of you getting it are probably slim to none, because I think I did something with that on, like, I think it was some telephone account or something I had, wireless, whatever, AT&T, something like that. And I filled out something, but I didn't get it. So you could get it, but the odds of you getting it is slim.
Yeah, I don't want to waste my time. Like, if it's, you know what I mean? If it's an easy thing to fill out, I'll fill it out.
Yeah.
I'll take an extra $250.
Come on.
Just
do it, man.
Oh, I'll take an extra $250. So anyway, Jacob Wilson's up against Bobby Jr. Bobby Jr., by the way, adding some local flair to the WBC. He has signed on. He is in the World Baseball Classic. He has joined Aaron Judge and Paul Skeens. They've also announced that they're in. So Bobby Jr. will be the shortstop or one of the shortstops on the AL team. Now, this might mean that Seager, A, doesn't make the team, or B, chose not to be on the team, or C, can just get ready for the season. Because, you know, he's at the age, and he gets hurt enough. Do you really want him playing in the WBC, where you got to ramp up in early February?
Yeah, I guess we need to look back and see, like, how did it impact guys the last time around?
Well, I'll tell you what. Remember the Mets pitcher, the closer, Diaz.
Yeah. Yeah,
towards ACL or something like that.
Yeah, and wasn't it like hopping in from the bullpen? Like he was just going.
They
to the
won
mound.
A game, and he was jumping up and down. Right, it was in a scrum.
Yeah, that's what it was. You know, it's interesting. I'd like to hear from the fan text on this. 877-881-1053. 877-881-1053. Franklin injury attorneys fan text, because you made a reference there that there's local flair there, and obviously that's what Bobby Witt is. Bobby Witt was a you know, big time player at Colleyville Heritage. Do people think of him? Do you think locally people think of him as like, that's our guy?
I don't know.
I think Colleyville they probably do. But
that's probably why I'm biased. My kids go to school there.
I wonder if maybe it's more he's thought of like that, though, not because he actually played here, but because Bobby pitched here.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'll speak from the youth baseball world. Everyone talks about him.
He's a stud. He's
regardless,
awesome.
Regardless, you know, and you know, and this goes for other teams too. But they're constantly talking because he is one of the players that came up through our same local DFW youth baseball world. And there's a lot of them, but he's just the kind of the face of it.
No, and I totally get it. But I mean, it's similar to like Tyrese Maxey. Like Tyrese Maxey's a good player, and Tyrese Maxey is from here.
Mm-hmm.
I just have always worked, like, I don't know that everybody's just like, oh yeah, that's our guy.
Yeah, I know, you're right.
And Bobby Witt absolutely is. He went to high school here, like you were just talking about. His dad pitched here.
But I mean, we think of Kershaw like that, don't we?
Yeah. And I think we think of Kershaw like that more than, at least for me. I don't know. Again, it may be my own mentality on it. Because like you said, he is big in those circuits. I wonder if the rest of the Metroplex views him that way. That's why I'm curious at the fan text, if you guys feel like when Bobby comes here, it's like, hey, that's our guy.
Yeah. I don't know. So you got that outfield. You're going to have Stephen Kwan, Riley Green, Javi Baez, Mike Trout having a little resurgence, and then DH Ryan O'Hearn and Ben Rice for the American League. So the Rangers are going to get at least one in. We know that because that's by law or by rule. Actually, I don't know the law. But is it going to be DeGrom? Yes, probably. He probably will be in it. Will Eovaldi have a chance to get in? He should have a chance to get in. Depending on how he does in the, well, let's say, next two starts leading up. They're going to make that determination here in the next couple of weeks. But I don't know. I like when the pitchers are on your team from your team, because you get to see more of them. You get to see more, even if they're just pitching one inning, it seems like it's better than one at bat.
Yeah.
Then again, you want to have that pitcher rest. Like, does anybody really want DeGrom out there? Or would you rather just give him the extra rest?
Like at this stage of my life, yeah, I would probably want him to rest. But man, I will say this:
by the way, he would be slated to pitch the Saturday before. So as the rotation goes right now, he would pitch July 12th.
Which means if he pitched the Sunday, he could not play in the game. But if he pitches the Saturday, that means he would have 2 days between his start and the game. Now, that probably would be his throw day anyway, but do you really want him gassing up?
Yeah, I look at it like this. At this stage of my life where it's just like, you know, we're on here, we're talking about games and we're analyzing things like more just as part of our job and things like that. I mean, we're fans, but it's also part of our job. Like, I think of it and I go, I don't want him pitching. I don't want DeGrom pitching. Let's just let's get him as much rest as we can. But as a kid, like I remember as a kid, like I lived for that.
Yeah.
Hank Blaylock stepping in and hitting a home run off Eric Gagne in the All-Star game was big.
Very cool. Michael Young's triple.
Michael Young's triple. Alfonso Soriano's home run in the first inning in Houston off Clemens. Like, those were big moments to me as a Rangers fan, like growing up. And so I do kind of feel like if there's, you know, young Rangers fans around here who the All-Star game has a draw to it still probably and an allure to it and like, oh my gosh, this is so cool, all these stars out there. For them, I would say, and I think that's why a lot of guys do it. For them, I would say, I think it'd be nice to have the memory of I watched Jacob DeGrom in the All-Star game.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Now, if he doesn't, if he decides he doesn't want to go, they might take another pitcher just because they would have gone to the pitching route with the Rangers. But I mean, I would like to see Wyatt in there, or I mean, Josh Smith has deserved it too.
Yeah, the problem is just with Josh Smith, they put him in the outfield. It's just too loaded.
They would.
That's where his voting has been. Yeah. And so, but I mean, he's.
But he can play anywhere.
He's been throw Sam Haggerty in the All-Star game. Not? That's what we need. We need Sam Haggerty in there. That's what we got to have.
Real quick, what was Bruce Bochy honored for?
Bruce Bochy got a major award.
Oh, like major award.
A major award. Just like
for Geely.
Yeah, exactly, for Geely. See, you get the reference. Bruce Bochy was honored by the Society of American Baseball Research, SABR, S-A-B-R, for his work with scouts, commitment to player development. It's like a career achievement award. It's the Roland Hemond Award, and it recognizes a baseball executive who has demonstrated a lifetime commitment to professional baseball scouts and scouting and player development history. He had a funny line there, though, and it was something that I saw him getting a lot of praise for on Twitter yesterday. But he had said that he told his players he was going to the Saber convention, and they asked, what does that stand for? Sandwiches and baseball? He said, no, it stands for people who know more about your career than you do. And it's a good line.
It's a good line.
I saw somebody tweet this yesterday, and it got a little bit of traction. They said, if Bruce Bochy, one of the best managers of all time, who's managing his 28th season at 70 years old, can hold this opinion and choose to educate himself / be involved with Sabre, there's no excuse for any old school fan to say it is a negative for the sport. Which is true. I think Bruce is Bochy is the perfect collection of forward thinking and modernity and then still being able to hold on to some of the old school gut feelings and things like that that you just can't predict, that you can't factor for.
Yeah, look, it's I'm a big proponent of the Saber community and the analytics. There's also a subset of it where it's like, okay, you're being too literal with the data. There still are humans playing this game.
Yeah, there is the it swung too wildly the other direction.
It swung too wildly. I was a big proponent of doing it. It swung too far, though.
And I think analytics...
Gotta bring it back a little bit.
Analytics can go further in different sports.
Yeah.
Like, analytics, I feel like, can be applied more predictively in baseball than they can in football a lot of times.
Yeah, the football thing is, it's like, it's passing.
Football generally, I don't think football can be as predictive as baseball can. Football can tell you what's happened.
Yeah, I think it's better for roster construction in football, to be honest.
Yeah, you can get some of that.
All right, there's a little Diamond Cavs here on 105 Through the Fan. What do we have coming up at Below the Belt?
Why do two of the best players from the last 25 years have wildly different perspectives on Micah Parsons? That's next in Below the Belt right here on The Fan.
June is Men's Health Month. Optimize your total wellness with Men's T Clinic. For over a decade, Tolos continue to trust Men's T Clinic to transform their hormone health, mental focus, weight, movement, and sexual health. Be the next life change. 972-GO-MEN'S-T or mensteclinic.com.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
My belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
When it comes to evaluating the greatness of a particular player, would you rather take the opinion of someone who also plays a similar position, or would you rather take the opinion of someone who is tasked with stopping that player?
Well, I'll tell you this. The person who plays the position might have a greater intricate understanding of what they're tasked with doing. Mm-hmm. Someone who doesn't play the position would be able to tell you, like, the scouting report, what they do, how to stop them.
So let me give it to you this way. If I said CD Lamb, right, and we're talking about, hey, some all-time greats weighed in on CD Lamb, would you rather hear what Chris Carter has to say about CD Lamb, or would you rather hear what Darrell Revis has to say about CD Lamb?
That's a good question. I guess from a receiver corner spot, I would probably say the opposite. But then again, that's matchups, you know, like some guys are just tougher than others based on body type. But let's go with the opposite.
All right. Well, let's talk about it here in Below the Belt, which is sponsored by D&M Leasing. Check them out at dmautoleasing.com. And there's a little bit of a misnomer the way I just position the question, because in the instance of the person across from Micah Parsons, who is the gentleman that we're talking about here, this guy didn't even say anything about Micah Parsons. It was just the omission of his name that stood out. So Teron Armstead, recently retired, one of the better offensive linemen from the last 20, 25 years, 5-6-time Pro Bowler at tackle, tremendous athlete, was a genuinely great player. Somebody that I really, really respected when I would watch his tape. He had gone on NFL Network, and this was a long segment, so I didn't pull the audio. It was like 6 minutes long. But it was a good breakdown. He went ahead and they asked him, hey, give us your top five nightmare pass rushers in the NFL. And he's just fresh off the field, and he's played Micah Parsons before. And so he goes, okay, all right, let's go through it. So you want to go through his 1 through 5, or you want to go his 5 through 1?
5 through 1.
Okay, 5 through 1. Number 5, Jared Verse of the Los Angeles Rams, who collected 4.5 sacks as a rookie last year, was the defensive rookie of the year. He did make his list as the number 5 pass rusher.
Wow.
So did.
That's surprising.
Yeah, that's surprising to me. I would not think he would be, because to me, there's a slam dunk top 5, and I don't care what order you put him in. Generally don't care what order you put
okay,
him in.
Okay, so of pass rushers, your slam dunk is TJ, Miles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Micah.
Yep.
Bosa. Mm-hmm. Hutch?
No, not Hutch. There's one more you're missing. The Colleyville Heritage guy.
Max.
Max Crosby. Max, to me, I think there's levels to it. For a long time, it was just those 4. Max has jumped into that level to me. Aiden is really, really good, and he could get there, but Aiden's just on the tier below it to me. But those are great names right there.
Yeah.
A lot of those names. Number 5 was Jared Verse. Number 4, Chop Robinson. Also coming off of his rookie year, where he had 6 sacks as a rookie. Now, this is gassing somebody up, his number 4, because Chop Robinson plays for the Dolphins. Okay, so that's...
Who's making this list?
Teron Armstead, okay, who just retired from the Dolphins, but formerly of the Saints, formerly of the Dolphins.
I get it. You go against them every day.
Sure. And so you're going to put that one in there. I still don't understand the Jared Verse one, but okay, we'll go with it.
Did they even play each other this year?
I don't know if they did. Let me look real quick. But either way, I understand the Chop Robinson thing, why he would do that. Yes, they did play against each other, the Rams and the Dolphins did play.
Worked.
Yeah, let's look and see what his numbers were in that game, how many sacks he may have had in the game. But I understand why you would go with Chop Robinson. I understand that and the way that he has an impact. By the way, 1 sack for Jared Verse in that game, 1 quarterback hit. Number 3 on this list. Would you like to take a guess?
Micah Parsons.
Nope.
TJ Watt.
Nope.
Miles Garrett.
Nope.
Max Crosby.
Nope.
Aiden Hutchinson.
Nope.
Joey Bosa. Nick Bosa.
Nope, nope.
Nope, nope. Nope. Trey Hendrickson.
It's Trey Hendrickson. You got it. Good job. Trey Hendrickson to me is acceptable as a top 5 choice. I will allow you to put him in there because he's produced. But again, I still think there's a definite difference between the two. His top 2, though, you just named a lot of guys that are not, like, I mean, there's only 2 slots left. Number 2 on this list is Max Crosby. And then number 1 is Miles Garrett. There's no TJ Watt. There's no Nick Bosa. There is no Micah Parsons on his list.
Well, I have no problem with TJ Watt not being on there because he's a try-hard guy.
All right. It's really hard to say. Nick gets hurt, whatever else, but I mean, it's really impossible to tell me that Micah Parsons isn't one of the five nightmare matchups.
Yeah. I'm trying to think when Miami and us played.
It was 2 years ago. It was after the Buffalo game.
Yep. And Micah was not hurt.
Yep.
Maybe Armstead was hurt in that game. Or maybe they were on opposite side. I don't know.
But even still, if we're just talking about, like, he's a tape study.
Yeah. That's a bad list.
It's a terrible list.
It's an intellectually dishonest list.
And that's that. Like, I understand. I will give you the pass on Chop Robinson. You cannot put Jared Verse ahead of Micah.
You just can't put Jared Verse ahead of Micah, ahead of Bosa. You can't put him ahead of Hutch. You can't put him ahead of... Shoot, man. There's about half a dozen other guys you can't put him ahead of.
Teron Armstead was playing that game against Dallas. Micah Parsons had 3 quarterback hits in that game. So it sounded like he was more of a nightmare matchup. So I genuinely don't know what he's thinking. All right, let's look at the other side, though. Somebody who's not quite a pass rusher, but was a linebacker who was a heavy blitzer and is definitely a defensive savant. Let's look at the other side of the ball and what he has to say about Micah Parsons. This is an interview from Johnny Manziel's podcast that he did with former Chicago Bears great Brian Urlacher.
Which current player do you see when you're watching football these days in the NFL and see and be like, that guy would have fit well in our era?
My favorite player is Micah Parsons. I grew up a Cowboys fan, by the way. So, of course, my favorite player is going to be on the Cowboys. He's just different, man. That dude, his get off, his... And the thing I like, I watch guys now, their effort. You know, they're all athletic. TJ Watt, same way. Dude, just their motors never stop. There's a play a couple years ago. There was a screen that he kind of ran up the field, you know, let him go, and then they threw it. And he chased him down. I think he caused a fumble at the one or knocked out of bounds at the one. The Cowboys end up getting the ball back on the next play because if he doesn't run down the field and stop him, they score. I just like effort, and I like guys who impact players. And he plays hard. And so same as TJ Watt. They get to the football, man.
So Brian Urlacher, you go from... Teron Armstead, who's just like, yeah, who are those two? Watt and Parsons. To Brian Urlacher, who plays that side of the ball and is like, those are the two standouts to me.
Mm-hmm.
But like the guys that didn't even mention Myles Garrett.
Right.
But just mentions us two. And it's fascinating to me. How can two people who are so connected, obviously play different sides of the ball, but are so connected, could see quality so differently?
Because I think they look at it from a different perspective. Like I think if you were to ask, you know, quarterbacks who their favorite quarterbacks are, they might look at it in a completely different way than we do, right? You have you heard of like the phrase, he's a musician's musician?
Yeah. Or you like your favorite player's favorite player, like that kind of thing?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think you get that more when it's your position.
I could see that. I do wonder, my natural inclination would be, Urlacher is going to look at that, and he's going to look at that side of the ball, and he's just going to go, who do I just evaluate and watch and say, you do your job the right way? Versus where I feel like on the other side of it, it's going to be, who gave me a problem?
Yeah.
Like because
it's very much a matchup.
It's going to be personal experience. Like, for instance, Tyron Smith may have said one of the best pass rushers in the game was Olivier Vernon, because Olivier Vernon gave him trouble a couple different times.
Right.
And it could be a case where it's like, why is Olivier Vernon on this list? But that would make sense. But again, it still doesn't totally track to me because we're talking about Micah being more impactful in that game than Jared Verse was.
And so it could be something like he gets his hands on him. And let's say he gets his hands on Micah, he's able to stop him. But if he gets his hands on Verse, he's not. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, he felt the power.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's a lot of it. That's why, like, you know, I look at it. I think the most unbiased one would be the person on your side of the ball that plays your position. That's the more unbiased one, the more technically sound one.
Yeah, because it's like Jalen Ramsey. You remember Jalen Ramsey did the GQ article? And it was what do you think about this guy? Trash. Like, he was just, it's no respect. And I don't think that's Teron Armstead.
Right.
Like, I don't think he's just naturally out of pocket disrespectful. It's just that stood out to me. It's just like, man, that feels a little hot takey right out of the gate. Let's go over to NFL.com really quickly as we wrap up below the belt here. Nick Shook had an interesting breakdown the other day. We're used to seeing different rankings and different things like that. I don't usually see them group divisions this way. So I thought this was an interesting way to do it. He ranked the divisions in football by quarterback play. or by the quality of their quarterback room. And so he took every division of football and ranked them 1 through 8. Nick Shook over at NFL.com, which he's the one who also does their quarterback index.
Okay.
So he does their annual thing. So if I were to say, take a look over the divisions, the best division in football, if we're just talking about quarterbacks, would be which one?
Just looking at quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to either be the AFC West or the NFC North.
Very good. It is the AFC West. Ring him up, Peyton. What you're going to be stunned to find is the NFC North is 6th out of 8.
Now, they're talking backups, too?
No, this is just the starters.
All right, I don't know how you can do that.
Caleb Williams, Jared Goff, Jordan Love, J.J. McCarthy. AFC North is 5th with Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Kenny Pickett, / Joe Flacco, and Aaron Rodgers. 4th is the AFC East with Josh Allen, Tua, Justin Fields, and Drake May. And then we get to the Cowboys division. The 3rd-ranked division is the NFC East with Dak, Russell Wilson, Jalen Hurts, and Jaden Daniels. And then I got to—I don't know. I might have an issue with this one. Number 2 is the NFC West. Kyler Murray, Matthew Stafford, Brock Purdy, Sam Darnold. Are you okay with that stack right there, saying AFC West, NFC West, NFC East, or do you think just that's just too much disrespect to the NFC North?
That's a lot of disrespect for the NFC North. But I can't argue the NFC West is, you're going to have Purdy and Stafford. Generally, most people put them both in the top 10. Kyler is a wild card player. And Sam Darnold's coming off a great year. The NFC North, they got Love and Goff are top 10 or fringe, depending on where you put Love. Most people put Goff in the top 10 now.
Yeah, it depends.
But they got the upside with Caleb and JJ.
What's fascinating to me is the last ranked division here is the AFC South. And when you look at the quarterbacks there, they are all top 4 picks. CJ Stroud, wow. Anthony Richardson, Trevor Lawrence, Cam Ward.
Wow. And then Daniel Jones was a 6th pick and he's the backup.
Yeah. So, it's just it doesn't always track that way. That's not always. And then you've got a division like the NFC West where they've got Purdy in there or Dak in the NFC East. So it doesn't always translate that way.
Interesting. Belo.
The Belt.
Right here on Sean and RJ on 105 through the Fan. It is Friday. It's time for Worst Take. Who's going to capture the title? Hagee wants car inspections included in wedding vows. Joy Taylor, head over heels for Angel Reese. And we've got a weekly contribution from Nico Harrison. It's next. Worst Take on the Fan, 9 o'clock hour.
This podcast is powered by Men's Tee Clinic. June is Men's Health Month. Optimize your total wellness with Men's Tee Clinic. For over a decade, Tolos continue to trust Men's Tee Clinic to transform their hormone health, mental focus, weight, movement, and sexual health. Be the next life change. 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or menstclinic.com.